Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, chair of the club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Dr. Richard Caro. Dr. Caro is co-founder of Tech Enhanced Life, a public benefit corporation with the mission of improving the quality of life of older adults and their families. For several years now, his work has focused on the intersection of aging and technology. In addition to his work with Tech Enhanced Life, Richard is CEO of Tangible Future Incorporated, an interventional management consultancy based in San Francisco, and is an active member of several Silicon Valley angel investor groups, with a particular focus on the intersection of healthcare, aging, and technology. Richard started his career as a researcher at Stanford University and then spent a number of years developing novel medical products, such as the world's first LASIK device for changing the shape of your eyes. He has a PhD in physics from Oxford University, where he was a Rhodes Scholar, and holds 24 patents. Welcome, Richard Caro.
Can everyone hear me okay? Excellent. So thanks for coming. What I'm going to talk about today is something called the Longevity Explorers, and I'm going to focus on partly what that is and partly what we've been doing. And it's a group of people, and you'll learn more about it. And I think you'll find that what we've been up to might be useful for you. So let me introduce it. As John said, I used to be a physicist, so I have to have a graph in my presentations, but I promise there'll only be one. And this is the reason I'm interested in the intersection of technology. Some of the people who we work with have other reasons, but this is my personal thing. And what this graph is showing is time on the horizontal axis and functional ability on the vertical axis. So functional ability is how well we can walk, talk, think, kind of all that stuff, right? And so what that's really showing you is that when you're 20, it's all pretty good, stays good for a while, and gradually starts to fall off. And the red curve is sort of what would happen if you just left things alone and you didn't wear eyeglasses and you didn't get hearing aids and you didn't do all the other things you would do. My personal opinion is that technology is such today that it has the potential for there being all these gadgets and widgets and tools that can push out the time at which functional ability gets in the way of doing what you want. In other words, that green arrow that sort of pushes the curve to the right, we're interested in finding products like that and helping make them happen. That's really what's behind my interest in all this. But when we started, we kind of went out and started talking to people in their 80s and 90s and asking, you know, what are the challenges of growing older? This was about 5 years ago. And we learned all sorts of stuff, of course. But this slide is here because we had this really interesting experience with one lady who was 92, I think. And she came along to be interviewed. And she was completely mentally on the ball. She had a blog. She had her own blog. Every day she went out and took a photograph of something, put it on her blog, wrote something, and posted it, right? But physically, she was a bit frail. She needed some help to come and visit with us. And we had this fascinating interview, and she told us all about these kind of issues that were a bit annoying about growing older. And then she said, you know, the real thing that I hate about growing older is that I feel I can't be useful anymore. And I was kind of a bit surprised to hear that. Now I've heard it a lot. And we talked about it a bit more, and what came out of it was that, you know, she used to feel she had a very useful role in life. She had things she'd done all her life. But at some point, she felt like society had kind of closed off her ability to be useful. And I've since learned that many people feel that they'd like to be more useful than they are. And that there's that sense of purpose that people sometimes feel is a bit hard to have when you get to a certain age. So as we realize that there's this kind of huge pool of people with a whole lifetime of accumulated wisdom and experience that society is sort of ignoring, we thought perhaps it's possible to accomplish two goals at once. The goal I mentioned before of trying to find interesting new technology gadgets to help us all have better lives for longer, that's one goal. And second, the goal of people like this lady that I'm talking about to have a little bit, an extra thing they could do in their life to make their sense of being useful a little bit more than it was before. So we started this club called the Longevity Explorers. And that's really what I'm going to talk about. Here's a picture of some of our circles. We call them circles. They're basically people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. We have a couple in their hundreds. You're allowed to come if you're not 62. There's no real rules, but most of them are in that age demographic. And I'm going to explain what we do. But really, the way we frame it is it's a unique sharing, evaluation, and ideation community made up of this particular demographic. There's lots of numbers on this slide because I wanted to remember to make a few points. So first of all, we've been doing this for 48 months now, about 4 years. We just had the anniversary, fourth anniversary of one of our circles. And most of our original circles have been going for all that time. During that time, we've had over 150 circle meetings. They're monthly meetings. For my sins, I've moderated many of them. I did all of them for the first 3 years, but now we have a new model where some other people are starting to do some too. We have 7 circles right this second. We have over 300 explorers. And one of the features of this community is it's meant to be a sharing community, right? So we explore things, we learn things. I'll give you some examples in just a minute in case that's a bit vague. But we publish online what we do. We audio record our discussions. And hundreds of thousands of people read what we do. And so we kind of feel like not only are we learning things for ourselves, but we're helping cross-pollinate that around the world. Okay, that's kind of the big picture. Now I'm going to give you some specific examples. And there's definitely a technology focus to what we do. But some people immediately think it's all going to be about computers. And it isn't. So this slide is to remind me to make the point that many things count as technology. They don't have to be computers. And what this slide is about is a topic that is very popular in many of our circles, which is ways to open jars more easily. So who here has familiarity with the difficulty of opening jars? Put up your hand. Okay, quite a few. Okay, so at one of our circles early on, one of the members said, you know, I just bought this new jar opener and it's really terrible and I want to bring it along next time and tell everyone how awful it is so that no one else buys it. And then someone spoke up and said, well, I just got a good one. I like it. I want to bring that along. And so at our next meeting, all the members came with their jar openers. And we sat around and we compared notes and it was kind of interesting. Everyone liked it. And I went home and I thought to myself, you know, there's something interesting there. What if we were a bit more systematic? What if we sort of got all the good ones and brought them along and designed a little quasi-scientific testing protocol and sat around actually testing them and trying to learn what the difference is between a good one and a bad one? Wouldn't that be interesting? So we did that. And we did that at 5 separate circles on all in a month or two. And this is a picture of one of our circles up in Sacramento doing that. So what you're looking at there is a group of people sitting around this table. They all have, we have, I think there are maybe 30 different jar openers. I went on Amazon and I got all the ones that had a good review and bought them all and we brought them along and lots of different jars and we tried one after the other. And not only was it interesting, we learned some really unexpected things. So I sort of thought that there'd be one best jar opener, right? That was my expectation. Or maybe 2 or 3 that were all good. But what we learned was that different people need jar openers for different reasons. So some people have a grip issue, but then other people, no problem with gripping the lid, it's the levering that's kind of hard. And there was a third reason that I'm forgetting right now. So there were three different reasons, and depending on the reason, the product that was best differed. And we found that that's kind of very common now, this idea that there's no such thing as a best for everybody. There's a best for specific types of people. And if you understand what those types of people are, then you can be much more intelligent about suggesting what people should use. So we always write this up, as I said. There's a page on our website that's all about the best jar openers. It's basically the results of our Explorer community. It's been there for a couple of years now. If you Google best jar openers, it'll pop right up there on page one of Google, and people seem to like it. So that's one example, right? That is technology in its broadest form. Oh, and let me just extend this conversation. So, you know, over the years, our the things we're doing have kind of morphed a little bit. So what I told you about there was we went and bought them all, we tried them out. So over the summer this year, I got an email and it said, I'm an inventor. I've decided the world needs better jar openers and I've invented one. Are you interested? And so we do quite a lot of this sort of stuff where we help companies and things. But in this particular case, I said to myself, you know, this is such a recurring theme in our circles. Everybody is always interested in jar openers. And so this is a picture of the invention. This is a prototype of it. They sent it to me to try out. And we took it along to one of our circles last week and we tried it out. And it was very interesting. I'm not sure I'm ready to say this is the best thing since sliced bread just yet. But we tried it out. We learned a lot of stuff and we're going to share it with the inventor. So we've gone from trying to find the best one that's there to helping people make better ones. Here's a different topic. This is a more high-tech topic. So who knows about Alexa and the Amazon Echo? Most people, not 100%, but pretty close. Okay, so getting on for a couple of years ago now, one of our explorers brought along to us. So at the beginning of our circles, let me take a step back. At the beginning of our circles, there's a section where we talk about whatever the members want to talk about. And so the topics range from, they range all over the map. And sometimes they're really fascinating. Sometimes they're not so fascinating. But everyone likes the idea that they can talk about whatever they want in a structured way, not just random. And one of the explorers said, I want to tell you all about this fantastic new product I bought called Alexa, and she was just in raptures about how good it was, right, for her. And everyone listened, not everyone knew what it was, and we went home. And over the next few months, gradually more and more people started to be talking about this product at our circles. And after about 9 months of this, it became clear that this was really very interesting to quite a lot of people in our circles. So these are, you know, people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And it's kind of ironic because around about then there was a skit on, I think, Saturday Night Live. Who's seen that? It's called something like the Silver something. I think so. That's right. And, you know, it was pretty funny. But it was also a bit sort of, if it had been about a different demographic, it would have been criticized for being something-ist. We realized that probably since our explorers are interested in this, there are other 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds out there who are thinking, what is this product and what is it good for? And if you Google Alexa, you can see lots of things that 20-year-olds think it's good for. And you can see, you know, Amazon's propaganda about what they think 30-year-olds should like it for. You can't find anything about what an 80-year-old would do for it or whether they'd like it. But now you can, because we have this write-up from all we do is summarize our explorers' findings. And what we've put up there is what they use it for. And basically, there's quite a range of things. Since you all put up your hand, I'm not going to waste a lot of time telling you what our 80-year-olds like to do with it, but you can ask me in questions if you want. But they range from, you know, turning on the lights, turning off the lights, all the things you can imagine. One of the things that's really interesting is some of them find it really almost like a personal friend. So they have conversations with Alexa, and they think it's really a very helpful tool. Tool's the wrong word. It's almost like their friend. That's an interesting dimension. Along with my theme of finding things, popularizing things, and then looking for betterness, in the last year, we've had all these companies reach out to us because they're developing skills that sit on top of Alexa that they think would be good for 80-year-olds. And frankly, none of them, I think, are quite right yet, but they raise all these interesting questions. They're working on things like better versions of being your friend, or helping you not be as lonely, or an idea that I like, a sort of concierge, where you can say, hey, Alexa, you know, get me Uber, order the milk that the smart refrigerator told me I needed, things like that, right? And then there are the usual caregiving assistant type ideas. There's this whole raft of ideas for things that could go on top of a voice-enabled product. And I think that perhaps some of them will be really useful eventually. Right now, I don't think they are, but it's very it's kind of exciting potential. I'm just going through a bit of a laundry list of interesting things we've worked on here, right? I almost brought this one along with me, but I came on munis and I didn't really want to carry it with me. Anyway, there's a story behind this. This is a different one of our circles, and as you can see from the headline, they're looking at some products which we call lighted canes. But let me take a step back. So at one of our monthly meetings, one of the explorers said, you know, I want to discuss the fact that I used to really like going out at night, and now I don't. And I really dislike that, and I wish there was something I could do about it. And so there was a lively conversation about that, and it turned out that that particular lady, she didn't go out at night anymore because the sidewalk in front of her house had roots from a tree growing up through it, and so it was all bumpy, and she was worried about falling over, right? I have that outside my house too. One of the other guys, he said, well, I don't go out anymore because there's this crosswalk near where I live on Geary Boulevard, and people keep getting run over on it, he said, even when the light is green, right? So he was exaggerating a bit, but at the time, there'd been a couple of people who had been knocked over on the crosswalk. So he was scared to be out crossing the road in the dark. A third lady said, I really like going to the theater. And I used to go to the theater in San Francisco a lot. But to do that, I really need to park downtown and then I need to walk down through the Tenderloin and it's just too scary now. So I'm always worried I'm going to get mugged. And so there was quite a, you know, interesting conversation. And that fit the category of lots of our conversations, which is, let's understand the nature of the problem, right? And then we all went home. And the next month, one of our other circles, they said, you know, we listened online to that discussion. I forget if I mentioned this, but we audio tape all these discussions and they're all online. And they said, we think we might be able to come up with some good products that could help with this. Can we do a bit of brainstorming and inventing? So we did. And we had a couple of circle meetings where we basically did an ideation session about solutions to the challenges of not being able to go out at night. And various product ideas were, quote, invented, including the idea of a cane with a light and a few other things. And, you know, that was illustrating the – so with these stories, I'm kind of – letting you see some of the power of these meetings. So we're uncovering problems, we're inventing solutions, inventing, you know, in inverted commas. And anyway, so we went home and I thought to myself, John mentioned I have a few patents. So I used to invent things in prior life. And I've always found that when you invent something, it's pretty typical that someone else, somewhere else, invented something similar about the same time. And, you know, it's hard to have a completely new idea. And so I thought as I went home, maybe those ideas we just came up with in this circle, perhaps someone already thought of that, but we just don't know about it. So I Googled away. And sure enough, there were some products similar to the ones we'd come up with, including some canes with lights on them. And again, I bought the ones that looked promising. We took them along to the circles. Everyone tested them out. And what we found was there was one that was really quite good, which this is a picture of. It has a light so it can get around the problem of the sidewalk being buckled. It has a flashing red light you can turn on to get around the problem of crossing the road and not being seen. And it has a button you can press to have a siren go off when you're getting mugged. And it's a popular product. When I bring it along, everyone goes, oh, how cool. Anyway, so that one was good. And what was equally interesting was that the other two, which had looked good to me on Amazon, you know, I read all the reviews and there seemed nothing wrong with them. The other two had fundamental flaws with them. So this is kind of showing you that Amazon isn't as perfect as you would think, which is surprising to me. But anyway, so there's a different sort of technology-enabled product to help overcome a particular problem. Oh, that's a picture of it. And again, we've started to get emails from inventors. This is a picture of a prototype that I bought from an inventor. And it's the same basic concept, but he's taken it one step further. So it's got much brighter lights, and it's actually, I'm not sure it's actually better, but it was an attempt to be better. It's got much brighter lights. It has a pepper spray nozzle built into it. See up, actually, right there, there's at the end of the handle is a little pepper spray nozzle, which you can just swivel around and spray people. I'm always reluctant to bring that to my talks for obvious reasons. Anyway, so this is, again, you're seeing this dynamic of inventors coming along, trying to have good ideas that are better than what was there. We're helping them. We're still waiting for all the really good things, but hopefully they're coming. You know, I normally don't show this in my talk, but the number one popular topic in all our circles over the last 4 years and on our website is clipping one's toenails. Does anyone resonate with that? Not many of you. Anyway, so what I can tell you is it's a popular topic in the demographic of people in their 80s and 90s. And initially I thought, well, what an incredibly uninteresting topic. And how sort of lacking in intellectual content, right? But it's a real problem. Maybe it seems mundane and small, but it's a real problem that lots of people have. So in our circles, we tried out lots of different products. You know, there's a page again where you can look at which ones work and which ones don't. But none of them are really that good. And so again, this is a prototype from a student in Ithaca, New York, who is, I think she's an occupational therapy student. And as part of one of her courses, she was exploring problems that older adults have, and she found our website and she invented a new idea that this is a prototype of. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't know, how many of you have had to do with inventing and prototypes and things like that in your life? Okay, not too many of you. So one of the things is prototypes always look awful and they've always got lots of things wrong with them, and it doesn't mean that they're bad ideas. This is an early stage prototype, right? So no one would be wanting to take this home. But it's got some interesting ideas buried in it. Moving along to some different topics, I think that, you know, this is one of the most powerful tools for us to have better lives as we grow older. And it's not because of the phone part or the email part, although they're useful. It's because of the potential for really interesting apps. So we've had an ongoing activity for several years of finding, you know, apps that are good for 80-year-olds is how I think of it in my mind. And again, if you Google apps, you find lots of apps that are good for 20-year-olds. When I first started thinking about this, the number one app that I could find was it produced a map with a green dot where you were and a series of red dots representing the closest, cheapest beer that you could find. And that was the most popular app at the time. But, you know, it isn't really popular with 80-year-olds, right? It's popular with college kids. Although some of our explorers told me they liked that app too.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
Anyway, so we're always tracking down interesting apps. And there's if you want to ask about it after, there's lots of ones we can talk about. One of the ones that's kind of the most interesting to people because of its profound ability to change one's life if one isn't driving is Uber and Lyft. And what's interesting about this, I think, the point I want to make, since we've got an audience of diverse ages, is that everybody thinks apps for older people are all going to be about infirmity and, you know, caregiving and medication management and all that stuff. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But this is a perfect example where it's not really an app for older adults. It's just an app. But its functionality, which is getting from A to B in a seamless way at your convenience quite inexpensively, is actually much more valuable to someone in their 80s who can't drive for themselves than it is if you're 20 or me. So this is very popular and kind of life-changing. And I think it makes you really rethink the idea of, well, what is an app that's good for older adults? It doesn't have to be about infirmity. It has to be about doing something useful that they really care about. We have a thing called the Useful Apps Club, which is people who are interested in this. And we are always looking for people who would like to try out some, you know, a category of interesting apps and decide which one's best and stuff like that. So this is a bit of a laundry list, but this is a whole different topic. I've talked about this at this club before. There's a class of products which I think of as activity tracking home sensor systems. They're sensors that go in somebody's house, and they're meant to keep an eye on them and make sure they don't fall and hurt themselves and various other things. I and a colleague called Mary Hulme were very interested in this back in 2014. There's a little ebook we wrote about it. It's a fascinating subject. They have not taken off at all. They work quite well, some of them. Some of them don't. Some of them do. And really no one wants them. And it's quite interesting to talk about why that is. Perhaps we can discuss that later. We've also done a lot of work with medical alerts. Not much to say except that's me. I tried out lots of them. I'm probably the world's expert on this topic. And some of them are quite good. Some of them are terrible. They all look kind of ugly. You wouldn't want to wear one if you could avoid it. We're looking for better ones. Rich and I there were just Rich is one of, we have several of our explorers in the audience, actually. But we were just discussing how interesting it is that the new iWatch has some of the, quite a few of the features of these ugly things. And at least in my mind, if you had to choose between one of those and an iWatch, which would you choose? I'd choose the iWatch. So I think that's an interesting new dimension to this space. Consumer electronics is starting to enter it. So we've realized in the last year or so that there's an additional dimension to the power of these explorer groups, because initially we had just a handful of them and I was facilitating them all. And so they weren't as varied in the discussions as they are becoming now that we have more of them with more people leading them. Our furthest away one now is in Providence, Rhode Island. We're kind of proud of that. We're learning how to make them work at a distance. And we've discovered that if we think carefully about the topics and have all the groups discuss something kind of interesting each month, it's possible to take those different discussions and synthesize them into something that's kind of, you know, more interesting than any one of the discussions all by themselves. And we call these Explorer Syntheses. I do anyway. And we just published a couple of these from recent discussions. One is all about the topic of when do you stop driving, which is quite interesting to many of our explorers, because the idea of not being able to drive anymore comes with all sorts of baggage and all sorts of connotations of lack of independence and lack of freedom. And, you know, I've moved from being a normal grown up to not anymore, all sorts of stuff, right? And as we talked about it, there were these interesting themes about, well, who decides that it's time to stop driving? Is that the government? Is it your kid? Is it me? You know, that's an important question. And how would they decide? So we had lots of to talk about there. And then the most recent one that just went live on our website this week, or maybe last week, is about loneliness and isolation, which is also a very interesting topic. And, you know, people want to talk about what it meant to them, how to avoid it, stuff like that. What do you do if you don't like parties and everything that the sort of ecosystem of older adult support arranges to help with this problem is parties? How do you, you know, what do you do? So, what was interesting is there was a formula. The groups kind of converged on a bit of a formula, which I thought was exciting, actually. So these discussions over the last 4 years have tested a range of different things. We've learned that we can uncover unmet needs. We can, you know, investigate products. We can do brainstorming and ideation. Everyone who comes finds them enjoyable. And we've moved from kind of phase one of this initiative, which was really a club solely for the benefit of the members, to phase two, which now combines two things. So one still is a club solely for the benefit of the members. And pretty much everything I told you about is the club for the benefit of the members and other older adults. But in addition, we've now combined that with a second set of activities that we call sponsored explorations that we do separately at a different time and place to the club meetings so that we don't get muddled up about who we're trying to help. But in these sponsored explorations, we work with companies who want our help, and we do all sorts of things ranging from discussions to, so we call them exploration workshops. They're typically a group of people that get together to talk about some topic of deep relevance to a particular company's products. We do some kind of UX stuff where people interact with prototypes. And the one I'm most interested in and most excited about is real co-development, which we've done quite a bit of in the last 18 months. And what this is a company says, okay, I think this is an interesting demographic. I've realized that there's a huge amount of spending power in people in their 80s and that there's all sorts of unmet needs they have. And I'd like to develop some products that would honestly help them rather than just, you know, change the packaging or something on the product I already have. And I've realized, says the company, I need some help because my engineers are all under 40. No one in the company is over 60 except the CEO. And, you know, we don't know what we're doing. And so co-development is an ongoing series of activities where the company puts together a development team with engineers and designers, and someone like us puts together a group of the right sort of older adults who are good at doing a range of things, and we work together on collaborative projects with the goal of helping them develop a better product. So this is an example. So there's older adults from our Explorer group in there. There are members from a large multinational company that's very interested in this and that we're working with, and we're doing a quite fun project that we hope will lead to some interesting new products. That's kind of the end. I wanted to just run through a lap. I'm hoping you might have some questions and we can talk about any of it in more detail. If anyone thinks it sounds fun, there's a place you can put your name down if you want to be part of it up there on the podium. But who has – oh, am I allowed to ask questions or do you have to do something?
We'd like to remind our listening audience this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Dr. Richard Caro speak on the Longevity Explorers. Now, Richard, I'm sure there are many questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. I'll bring you the mic, and we can hear it.
Hi, Dr. Caro.
Hi.
My question is your company paid for this, or is this a volunteer? I mean, how does it work? How does your company work?
That's an excellent question. First of all, the entity behind this, which is called Tech Enhanced Life, is a public benefit corporation, which means that it's a cross between a nonprofit and a for-profit. And we're allowed to have a mission, but we're also allowed to make some money one of these days. So all of the club stuff is entirely, there's no business model for it at all. So all my time is for free, and all the members of the club come because they find it really interesting and enjoyable. So that's that part of it. The part where we're working with companies has a perfectly good business model. What we do for these companies is incredibly valuable. They think it's incredibly valuable. They pay for it. And everybody involved, all the older adults, anyone who's involved with it, gets a share of those revenues. But they're sort of on a project-by-project basis. So that's kind of the two aspects of what we do.
So this was really interesting. And I recognize some of the people in your slides.
Oh, good.
So I'm wondering if you are doing this primarily in retirement communities or where these groups are being formed.
So we've tried a number of different ways to seed these circles. Several of them are in large continuing care retirement communities. We had a group here at the Commonwealth Club for a while that went well, except we've decided that the membership here prefers this type of lecture to the participatory things. We have some of them are associated with the Village Movement. I'm not sure if you know about the Village Movement. So we have one, for example, at the San Francisco Village. The new ones that are starting are branching out into, for example, we've got one at a very large, you know, those very large residential communities around a golf course for over 55 type people. There's one of those that's about to start Explorer Circle. So I think the answer is they can be almost anywhere.
I would love to hear why people don't want that surveillance thingy in their homes.
Ah, yes. That's interesting. So you're talking about the sensors in the home that that are designed to look after you sort of unobtrusively. Well, that's a little bit of a mystery, but I'll tell you my theory. The facts of the matter are that there's been several companies that have developed them. Some of them work quite well. I've tried them out. There's nothing technologically wrong with some of them, but they didn't sell well at all. And most of those companies have kind of either failed or, you know, gone somewhere else in a lesser way. And the general message is that people aren't interested in buying these. Exactly why remains to be seen, but I'll tell you my theory. First of all, most of the I think this will ultimately be a successful product category, but I think that the current versions haven't gone about it quite right. Most of the early entrants felt that their target customer was the children of the older adults, and they marketed it to the children of the older adults, and they expected the children of the older adults to pay for it. That was their whole kind of concept. They neglected to think about whether the older adult would actually want it in their home, which turned out to be an issue because, unsurprisingly, the older adults had an opinion about that. And if no one bothered to ask them and no one explained why it was going to be useful to them, that was a bit of a problem. But I think more importantly, they learnt that the children of the older adults actually had other things they were quite keen to spend their money on, and that it was quite a hard sell to expect them to pay for something for their parent, which is a depressingly cynical thing to have discovered, but that's I think, what they found. So those are kind of some of the issues. There were also a number of technological issues that, you know, needed to be done slightly better.
A couple more questions. Since you've tried all the medical alert companies, I'm wondering which one you think is best. And also, what do you think is the most promising technology coming down the pike to enhance longevity?
Well, with the medical alerts, you know, there's lots of them, and I don't like to do product recommendations live on air. But on our website, there's a whole raft of stuff you can read about that. There's also some new ones that just came out that we haven't tested yet that look quite promising. But in terms of the most promising new technology, I'm going to turn that around a little bit. You know, the thing that has struck me is how truly terrible almost all of these products that we test are. They're designed poorly. No one's really thought about the real use case. No one bothers to think about, you know, they all have these stereotypes of what an 80-year-old might want, which are usually too simplistic. So they're mostly terrible. However, I think there are some technology platforms that, if done right, might end up being really interesting. And the whole voice-enabled thing, I think, is one of them. You can imagine artificial intelligence and voice and robotics having some good applications eventually. That, having said that, they're not here yet. And then I actually think things like the direction that the iWatch is going, where they're taking some of those, you know, wearable capabilities plus safety capabilities and wrapping them into more of a consumer product that isn't stigmatizing, I think that's got quite a lot of potential. So there's two.
This may be one of those product recommendations you don't want to do, but for me, using apps and kind of my iPhone and my computer and all that, one of my problems is this whole password management thing.
Ah, yes.
And so if I use Safari's generated one, then someplace with my iPhone, and I go, I have no idea what that thing is. So if
yep.
Do you know of a good password management system? That's my
It question. Comes up in our circle discussions a lot. So there's quite a few discussions on our website about it. We haven't done a systematic study to try and decide what the best one is. There's one I use that I'll tell you about after if you want. I'd rather not do it online. I'm not sure it's the best, but it works. But I think that's a very topical area that I bet there's room for improvement in.
You had mentioned there was a slide that said loneliness and isolation, and you said, well, we came up with a protocol or
a formula.
A formula for dealing with this. I would love to know what that formula is.
Yes. Well, I'm not sure I'll remember it right off the top of my head, but I'll try. No, I'll try. If you send me an email, there's an audio discussion in which it's discussed in quite some detail. I'll be happy to send you a link to it. You just have to send me an email. So, of course, it's a complicated topic, right? And when I say there's a formula, that's overly simplistic. But the general direction of the thought was that for some people, it isn't a problem anyway. So, you know, we're not trying to solve it for them. For other people, it is a problem. And of those people who find loneliness and isolation problematic, a significant number of them have personalities that mean that the idea of just going out to a cocktail party isn't all that enticing to them. And when they go to the cocktail party, they don't really enjoy it, and it does not solve their loneliness and isolation problem. And if you think about it, if you look at any senior center or a community, it's basically cocktail parties. They don't necessarily have cocktails, but, you know, they're parties. So there's a whole demographic in our explorer groups that are kind of going like, okay, so what do we need? And the things that people so in our discussions, there was a dynamic where one group of people were saying, yep, this is a problem, I don't know what to do about it. The other group were saying, well, I used to have that problem, I've kind of solved it, here's what I did. So if you synthesize the here's what I did part, it seems to boil down to, one, find a really an interest that you really, something you're really interested in, right? Could be anything. Like one guy's really interested in old British racing cars. Somebody else is really interested in bridge. Somebody else is really interested in something else. It almost doesn't matter, but something you're deeply interested in. And you do have to have that. If there's nothing you're interested in, we don't have a formula. But once you've found that something you're interested in, then you have to move out of your comfort zone, and you can't just sit at home hoping something will happen. You have to find a venue where other people with that same interest will be. And I call it an affinity group. So there's lots of examples. Meetups, of course, is an obvious one. So you know, you take your British racing car or your bridge interest and you start going regularly to these affinity group meetings. And the good thing about that is you don't have to be – it's not cocktail chatter. You don't have to like know how to make conversation with anybody. You don't have to enjoy that. What you do is you go and talk to people about the thing you're deeply interested in already. So suddenly that's not a problem anymore. And now you've got a regular activity where you're talking about that. And so then the next part of the formula is you have to persevere. You can't just go once and then say, oh, yes, that was supposed to fix it. So you have to go regularly, and you have to get, you know, there was a saying I was taught when I was at school, which is that you get out of something what you put into it, right? So if you have to go and you have to engage with the people, but it's because it's your interest, that's not so hard. And then after a while, you realize that you've been talking to these same people, you know, once a month for the last 2 years, and suddenly they're definitely acquaintances. Whether they're friends or not, that's debatable. But you've suddenly now got a circle of friends. So that's sort of the general theme of the formula.
Okay, thank you. Just another piece of that. I've kind of looked at meetup groups. I've been curious about this because I want to do some hiking. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway,
it appears that most of these groups are for young people. So how does somebody find groups for older people?
Ah, well.
Because there are not a whole lot of them from what I can see.
No, but that's an interesting topic, isn't it? Because if you think about it, if you find an affinity group with an interest you share, why are you only allowed to talk about that interest with people of your age? Okay. Well, our sort of formula suggested that maybe that's not such a bad thing to be, and that perhaps you shouldn't really be just looking for 75-year-olds. I don't think you're 75, but anyway. So, you know, that whole – maybe that's one of those things where you have to move out of your comfort zone a little bit. That's probably part of it.
I'm just curious if you ever discuss dating apps and meeting members of the or the same sex, opposite or sex or new partners.
Not a lot. It comes up sometimes. So we've sort of avoided spending a lot of time on that. But it's always mentioned. But what's interesting is, you know, with the social isolation and loneliness, it's mostly not about dating. It's mostly about having people to talk to, not just people to, you know, whatever you do with dating, right? So I think they're slightly separate topics, but they obviously overlap. And there are some interesting dating apps for older adults.
Positive comment, obviously. You two gentlemen are doing great job, great service, and just congratulate you for being persistent doing this. It's a fantastic opportunity for us to learn from you and do whatever is needed to be done to deal with some of these issues that you're talking about. So I'm really happy that you're doing this, especially now that you're deciding to do it in the evening here. I really understand where she's coming from in terms of the environment and the culture, and you know, we've been raised to be independent, not to rely on anybody else and so forth. It's just that there needs to be a culture change, and that's what's missing. And I wonder whether some kind of additional movement can go on. Because America, you know, is a great country, it's a great place to live, but this is sort of a weaknesses that exists, and in a lot of other culture doesn't exist. And some of us that really experience both cultures are really at shock. So that's what my comment is.
Yeah, no, that's a good comment. I don't think that was really a question, but it was a good comment. Thank you, right. And thank you for the positive feedback too. We always like that. Anyone else? Why don't you explain it, Steve?
Yeah. Could you say some more about it?
I see. Okay. Well, I don't want to dominate the discussion here. What I meant is that being a senior member of a society is a blessing in many countries. And younger adults and children, younger adults go to them for respect. And enjoying being with them. And here, the environment is so bad that you actually have to beg your kid, your grandchildren, to see them. It's ridiculous. It's the other way around. And I'm happy to say that I have seven grandchildren. And, you know, what I'm experiencing is totally different from what an average family, for example, in Iran or in China would experience. I just want to share one experience. I arrived in Canada in 1968, and I sort of stayed in an apartment with a lady that was renting the apartment. I was a graduate student. After 5 months of staying there, I was asking her, where are your children? Where is your son? You keep saying you have a son. She says, you got to be kidding. His wife is not letting him to come see me. So that's the kind of environment that needs to be changed. There is need for culture change in America. And maybe other culture has a better value for the adult, for the senior. And we need to really learn from them as well.
Okay, I think that stands alone. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's give our thanks to Dr. Caro for his comments here tonight. We'd like to thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 115th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.